From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever the case may be, wherever you are in these 25 time zones, covered each like a blanket by this program, Midnight in the Desert. My name is Art Bell. Hi, everybody. Rules for the show, simple, sweet and simple, no bad language, and one call per show. I want to do my thank yous. Telos, who supplied all the good sound, and obviously they know what they're doing, right? Joe Talbot here in Pahrump. Keith, my webmaster. Heather Wade, my producer, who works herself to death. Stream Guys, LV.net. Sales, Pete Everhart. Tune In Radio. News, Amy Martin, of course, and my beautiful wife, Erin, and, of course, my beautiful daughter Asia. 8 years old now. And seeming like an adult to me. Amazing, just amazing how quickly they grow. All right, so there are a couple of things, few things I want to talk to you about before we begin it. Dr. David Jacobs is coming on tonight for the third time for a very good reason on Midnight. I think he has made the most compelling case for abductions, and I'm afraid the most compelling case for an invasion of our planet. I know it sounds crazy. You just sit back and you listen. You'll figure it out. I do want to talk a little bit about this show. People apparently have the idea that all I do on the show is paranormal. And yes, I do a lot of it. But that is not all I do. And those of you who remember Back to Coast probably remember most of the paranormal stuff I did, but I did a whale of a lot of other stuff. And if there's something going on in the world, I pay attention to it. It's as simple as that. I'm not running with blinders here. And so I do other things if I consider them to be really important, of mass interest. And, you know, I understand that right now you're overloaded with the whole ISIS baloney. But when the homeland is threatened, when it's begun here, then it's newsworthy, and I do talk about the news. So those of you who have memories of Coast to Coast AM, I suggest they're slightly selective. You know, as memories tend to be. We remember the things we want to remember. And so I have always done all sorts of things. I've had country music stars on. I've a million different things. It was not paranormal every night. Mostly not political, though. I don't like politics. I guess you could consider ISIS politics, but I really don't. I just consider them a threat. You know, like nuclear weapons or whatever. They're a threat. And also, so there is that. I mean, come on, folks. Remember Back to Coast, the early years, and you'll know that I did a lot of different things, and I still will. If something comes along I think I need to cover it, I shall. Another thing, people last night thought I support Trump somehow. I think it's because I quoted something Don Lemon said on CNN. You know, he was talking about the Trump statement to bar all the Muslims, and he said something like, not like, he said, I think it's possible that millions of Americans, or many Americans, in their privacy of their own home are agreeing with Trump. I was just quoting Don Lemon. I don't support Trump. Actually, I don't support anybody right now. I'm sort of disappointed with the whole field. Nobody jumps out at me. So, for those who might have been curious, that's me. You know, I'm a libertarian. I don't find anybody that I get really excited about, period. So, the news, and I always do discuss it. And it begins with Trump again, of course. His call to block Muslims from entering the U.S. is being met with a chorus of near-universal condemnation across the country, around the globe. From the halls of Congress to 10 Downing Street, Trump's statement Monday, advocating a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the U.S., was blasted as bigoted, unconstitutional, and potentially dangerous for American interests abroad. Well, almost everything is dangerous for American interests abroad these days. Iran has tested a ballistic missile. They did it last month. We just find out tonight. This is the second such test since the summer's nuclear agreement. State Department said only that it was conducting a serious review of such reports. The test actually occurred November 21. According to the official, coming on top of an October 10th test, Iran confirmed at the time, officials said other undeclared tests occurred earlier than that. But he didn't elaborate. Just what they need is ballistic missiles, huh? To go with the nuclear weapons they don't have because of the agreement, right? Driven by the Paris terror attacks, the U.S. House voted overwhelmingly Tuesday to tighten controls on travel to the U.S. and require visas for anybody who's been in Iraq or Syria in the previous 5 years. So even the U.S. Congress is beginning to make moves, as they should. All right, so coming up in a moment, I think this is a very special show. David Michael Jacobs is a retired professor of history at Temple University in Philadelphia. He has also been a UFO researcher since 1966. In 73, he completed his doctoral dissertation in the field of intellectual history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison on the controversy over unidentified flying objects in America. This was only the second PhD degree granted with a dissertation involving UFO-related themes. He's written and delivered many articles, papers, and addresses on the subjects of UFOs and abductions, has been a consultant to the major UFO organizations from 1977 to 2011. He taught the country's only regular curriculum university course on UFOs and abductions, UFOs and American society. Since the early 90s, he has specialized in the UFO abduction phenomena and has investigated over 1,150 abductions with 150 different individuals. So come in.
Take a ride exclusively on the Dark Matter Digital Network. This is Midnight in the Desert with your host, Art Bell. To call Art, please dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
That's it, all right. Okay, if you think you're ready, here comes Dr. David Jacobs. Doctor, welcome back to Midnight in the Desert.
Thank you for having me again, Art. I appreciate it.
You're here for a reason, because I think more than anybody I've talked to, actually in my career, because I remember going back thinking what a breath of fresh air you were in the beginning, that you didn't think all these aliens were the friend of man and meant us no harm, and they were all warm and fuzzy types, and you're the only one who says no. Nah.
Yeah, actually, my colleague Bud Hopkins, who is one of the great pioneers in abduction research, felt the same way. And but people I just didn't hear that from people. It never materialized in anything I ever did, except once. It didn't exactly materialize, but a woman who I worked with, who was very, very, very much into the New Age world. so much so that it was difficult for me even to understand what she was talking about when she talked to me in just in sort of normal language. But she came twice. She came once, and then she wrote me a letter. Oh, well, let me just say, she had a standard abduction event. You know, they took her out of, actually, she was in the middle of New York City, and they did this to her and that to her and this to her and that to her, and then they put her back. And she wrote me a very angry letter saying that she did not remember what she wanted to remember. She had it in her mind that something else entirely different had happened.
Huh.
And she told me something completely different than she had in her mind. And she blamed it on me for asking questions like, what happens next?
Really? As though you should have all the answers, all of them.
I had all the answers, and I had obviously some sort of control over her, like Svengali and Trilby or whatever. And but in fact, that's not the way the kind of light relaxation induction I do. It's just relaxing people and getting them to feel very calm and then asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
All right. Is there any doubt in your mind that abductions occur?
Well, no, there is not. There used to be many, many years ago when I didn't know enough about it. But the evidence is your basic sledgehammer between the eyes now. It is not subtle. It's people see other people being abducted and may not be abducted themselves. People are abducted in groups and can confirm each other's abduction.
Can you give me a couple of examples of that? Because people love proof of things, and what we're going to discuss tonight is pretty wild stuff. So, yeah, let's begin with a few cases.
Well, I'll talk generically.
Okay.
People are abducted in groups oftentimes. Now, lots of these are family groups. For example, here's two people, two sisters. A sister lived on the grounds of the home that the other sister lived. The other sister was married, sister was the other sister wasn't. And both of them were abductees because this is an intergenerational phenomenon. If a person is an abductee and has kids, then all the children will be abductees.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had this abduction, and one of them called the other one up in the morning and said, we were abducted last night, and I remember telling you that I was going to resist and not do anything they wanted me to do. And I remember you told me that I shouldn't resist because it never works that way, and it's different, and you know, it's you can't just say no and that sort of thing. And the other sister said, "Yeah, I remember that." And then you said you were going to do it anyways, and I said, "No, it was just a waste of time." And then they took up this argument that they had on board the object in the next morning on the phone.
Do you know? Can you tell me without names where this occurred?
Well, I work with people who live within about a 100-mile radius of me, so I can see them often, them having to fly here or that sort of stuff.
And your location is?
Well, I'm in just outside of Philadelphia. I'm in for all intents and purposes in the Philadelphia area.
All right, good. You mentioned there are abductions in which witnesses actually see the person abducted or see the craft or both.
That does happen every once in a while. The most famous case of that was a book called Witnessed by Bud Hopkins, which was the Linda Cortile case. She's actually, after all these years, this happened in 1989, after all these years, she is actually starting to do some talking at UFO conferences. But not only did some people see her being abducted, but hundreds of people apparently saw her being abducted. It was a huge sighting. Traffic stopped on the Brooklyn Bridge, if you can imagine that.
I can.
The one person who got in touch with Bud Hopkins, who had witnessed this, thought she was watching a Hollywood movie or something. And the one of the interesting things she said is that while she was stopped there, she could hear people behind her and the cars behind her screaming. And Linda was taken right through her window, and with three small gray beings and into a waiting UFO, all of which was visible. Now, Bud thought that might have been a purposeful display, but I look at it more mundanely. I look at it as an error. The beings who are abductors are living, sentient beings. They are not perfect, and they make mistakes, and I think this was a mistake, actually. We will never know, but that's my guess at it.
Most certainly not the norm.
No, definitely not the norm. However, sometimes roommates will see other people being taken. Just a few seconds of it, but they can tell. One woman related to me a story about how she had no idea she was abducted or anything like that, but her roommate said, "You know, I had this bizarre dream. I dreamed I saw you coming down through the ceiling and into bed." And we just a session on that, you know, because that was the oddest thing was it wasn't her memory, it was her roommate's memory. So that happens once in a while, and of course it happens with family all the time, and you have to remember also that people are physically missing from their normal environments. This is not some sort of, I don't know, astral plane type situation where the mind leaves the body and they travel somewhere. It's not like that at all. It's a physical event that happens in real time. It's not like they come back and it's only 10 minutes later and it feels like they've been on board for 4 hours. It's not like that. If they feel like they've been on board for 4 hours, they've been on board for 4 hours. And when they return, it's 4 hours later. They usually notice that or often notice it.
So linear time.
It's linear time. And not only that, but people sometimes are returned without their clothes on. And oftentimes, if it's at night, it's with their pajamas not on. They're folded neatly on the foot of their bed. Or they're on backwards. Or they're wearing somebody else's clothes.
Oh, that's really weird. And that implies there are mass abductions, and so clothes occasionally get mixed up. I don't know.
Not perfect people. Exactly right. Yeah, not perfect aliens, I should say.
So in these cases where there have been witnesses, one would think that the New York Times, the big mass media, particularly with witnesses, if they stayed around to talk, would have printed this kind of thing up, right? I know that Bud Hopkins and yourself collect it, why didn't it hit the mainstream?
Because it's totally insane. Completely crazy.
Yeah.
You know, the New York Times used to publish UFO sightings every once in a while. And then the Philadelphia Inquirer used to publish UFO sightings. They virtually never published abductions. But they would publish UFO sightings, especially major ones seen by a lot of people and all that stuff. Major newspapers don't do that anymore. The only papers that do that are regional papers or small-town papers. But major newspapers do not do that anymore. It's just old news.
Yeah, I don't quite get the mainstream press, Doctor. I recall the Phoenix Lights, and so interesting, because I was actually on the air at the time. And, of course, we talked the hell out of it. We just talked and talked about the Phoenix Lights. It was such a gigantic sighting. So many thousands of people sighted these craft. And then I sort of got done with it. We wore it out. And then two months later, Doctor, the mainstream press suddenly had this, oh, my God, Phoenix Lights. There have been craft over Phoenix. It's like somebody threw a switch, and the mainstream press suddenly got it and ran with it. It was so weird.
Yeah, and that was some time ago now. That was a
long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, and every once in a while, a major event will happen, like the UFO sighted in Chicago at the airport at what's the name of the airport?
O'Hare.
At O'Hare Airport. Or the sighting in Stephenville, Texas.
Yep.
That sometimes will make the news, but it really is the exception that proves the rule. It's an awful situation. People have very few places to report it except for some UFO organizations.
Mm-hmm.
The United States government, the Air Force, or whatever, will not accept UFO reports from the public.
That's right.
They just refer them to local organizations. They will accept UFO reports from their own pilots because, you know, they think maybe they're going to be an intruder of some sort, the Russians or whatever, you know. But other than that, the UFO phenomenon seems to have peaked in the 90s in terms of news attention and in terms of television attention, and picked up a little bit in the thousands when cable became huge, and the number of stations suddenly became in the hundreds, and they had to fill the time. And now it's sort of dying down again.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is that the UFO phenomenon is exactly the same as it always was. It's although sometimes people say that they see more triangular shaped objects and larger objects than they used to in those days, but nothing has affected the UFO phenomenon itself. And it's in no relation to the society or what the society thinks or the news media or television or anything like that.
Well, God knows we're shielded from our own news. So here's a question for you. Is the phenomenon just an American one or is it worldwide?
It is a global phenomenon. The United States is not the mainstay of UFO sightings. It happens all around the world, as do abductions. It's a global phenomenon. My guess is that it started probably around the same time, last quarter of the 19th century, but it might have started here first. They might have gotten here first and then spread out. I would doubt that. I would really, really doubt that. It doesn't seem to go back much further than the last quarter of the 19th century, and even then it's problematic. So when people talk about ancient aliens and all that, the evidence for that is, well, it's between slim and none, you know, and as they say, slim left town.
Yeah, some notes on rocks, pictograms on rocks, that kind of thing, that are a little suspicious, okay. But beyond that.
And of course, in those days, people saw strange things in the sky every night of their lives, practically, because they didn't know what stars were, and they didn't know what meteors were, and they didn't know what this was and what that was.
All correct, yes. Here's something to think about. The animal mutilations, and in fact, the abduction of cows, pretty well documented, all of that stuff, was that prior to the human abductions or concurrent with?
You know, that we just don't know that, and that's probably going to be an unknowable unless they tell us in some way, the they being the occupants, as they used to be called years ago in UFO circles. So we don't really know. There have been documented cases of animal mutilations, but for what purpose, I can't imagine. I can see...
Well...
A whole cow. I can see that, because then they would cut it up and make food for hybrids, which we can talk about later.
Yeah.
But to take just certain organs, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, and they're all precision surgical cuts and all the rest of that. But what does make sense to me is that before you would begin doing whatever you're going to do, and we'll talk about that with human beings, you might take a look at what are considered to be lower life forms and look at some of the biology before you started in on the highest part of the chain.
How do you mean?
Us. In other words, you might want to take a look at a cow or a chicken or a cat or a dog or whatever before you began looking at humans, the top of the chain, we think.
Yeah, but it's so hard to get them under hypnosis. You know what I mean? It's very difficult.
Yes. Well said. But you get my point, right?
Yes.
I mean, when we come up with a new drug or a new procedure, we generally try it out on lower forms first.
You know, it is possible that something like that happened way back when, you know, back in the last quarter of the 19th century or maybe the first quarter of the 20th century. It's possible that, my guess is that when they first got here, now we're talking about the abduction phenomenon again.
Right.
When first got here.
I'll tell you what, hold your thought or we'll never complete it on this side of the news. So we're going to do our break, our news and what have you. Then we'll come back with Dr. Jacobs. And I'm telling you, what you're going to hear unwound tonight is going to scare the tar out of you. It really will, because it did me. That's why Dr. Jacobs is back here tonight. I'm Art Bell.
Midnight in the Desert. To call the show, if you're east of midnight, call 1-952-CALL-ART. If you're west of midnight, call 1-952-225-5278.
Those are the numbers. My guest is Dr. David Jacobs. His subject is alien experimentation on humans. And here he is again. All right, Doctor, proceed, please.
Oh, let's see now. Gosh, what was I saying? I lost my thread of thought, which, of course, I do on a daily basis, actually on an hourly basis.
That's quite all right. Let's move as quickly as we can toward this because there's so much. When do abductions typically begin?
Well, I actually just remember what I was going to say before.
Yes.
When these aliens first came here early on, they had to do some sort of study, even when they came here or from afar,
exactly,
to figure out that the life forms on this planet were amenable to them.
Exactly.
So that had to be done, and I would imagine, and it could have been done from afar too, for all I know. So they knew what they were doing by the time they showed up, or at least after they showed up. They pretty much had the routine down. They knew what they're going to do. They knew that this planet was suitable for them. They knew that life forms were suitable for them. Everything was suitable.
Well, I absolutely guarantee you, if I opened the line for abductees, I'd be flooded with people claiming to have been abducted. Now,
right.
I'm sure some of them are real, and I'm sure some of them are perhaps fabrications. I don't know, but the people sound very earnest and very honest, and not as though they're kidding around at all.
Yeah.
So that's just my observation.
Generally speaking, when people say that they've been abducted, the chances are that they have been abducted. Now, that's not everybody, obviously, and you have to be very careful here. And there are people who are, shall we say, not completely in command of their abilities to think properly. And so it can be difficult, but actually most people don't make those kinds of claims unless they pretty much truly believe it, because
right,
they are such outlandish claims.
They are actually many times even embarrassing. Let's move on. When people are abducted, they describe frequently lying on a table.
Right.
Why?
Well, you know, table procedures are an extremely important part of the abduction phenomenon.
Right.
They're given what we call an examination. Whether this is an examination or not, we don't know. But they're put on, their clothes are removed, they're taken into a room, there's a table there, they get up on the table. It is not like a table that normally we would consider a table with four legs and all that. But then there's a series of procedures that are administered to them that are both mental and physical procedures. We do not know what any of the technologically based procedures are. They use instruments, they use various kinds of contraptions and this and that. We have no knowledge of what these things do at all, which is a very interesting idea because, as I've said before, the abduction phenomenon is unlike the UFO phenomenon in that with UFOs you can be mistaken in what you see. But with abductions, it's black or white. It's you're abducted or it's mental. It's physical or it's mental.
Right.
And if this were mental, people would simply make up what these contraptions are, what these technological machines are doing to them. You know, they would just do that.
All right. Well, once again, we come to the proof part, Doctor, and perhaps here we can give people a little bit of proof. Are there similarities in the procedures that people describe that they have gone through? Yes?
Oh, absolutely. If there weren't similarities, we wouldn't be talking. They're all this, and not only similarities, they're precisely detailed similarities about specific instruments and things like that that I've heard 100 times.
I mean.
And nobody has the slightest idea what they are, and nobody outside of me and other UFO researchers have ever heard anything like that. And so it's procedures that are both physical and mental as well. In other words, one time I was working with a woman, and she was a young girl at the time. And stop me if I've said this before. And she said that this being was staring at her, and I said, "Well, you know, what's he staring at? Is he staring at the fact that you're laying there, you know, assuming he's standing around or something?" And he said, "No, he's staring. He's pretty close to me." I said, "Well, yeah, you know, is he looking at your head or something?" And he said, "Or your body, you know?" She said, "No, he's looking at my eyes. He's looking at my eyes." I said, "Well, how far away is he from you?" And she said, "Well, his forehead is touching mine."
Wow.
And I said, "Well, can you close your eyes?" She said, "No." I said, "Well, can you avert your eyes, you know, go left, right, left, right, left,
mm-hmm.
right?" She said, "No." And I had absolutely no idea what that was.
Very interesting. I mean, if you think about our vision, if we were forehead to forehead, Doctor, I couldn't make out details of you at all.
Right. I did figure it out to the best of my abilities, which may be in totally and completely wrong, but I did figure it out eventually. What they're doing there is their eyesight is not exactly the same as ours. They have a different properties. But they're hooking into the optic nerve, which is the only nerve that can be seen from the outside, from what people tell me, and using it as a conduit to energize any other neural pathways in the brain that they want. So the correct question to ask people when this happens is, what's going on in your mind doing this? And they'll say things, "Well, let's see, I'm seeing a tabletop, I'm seeing a pencil, I'm seeing a dog, I'm seeing a painting," and all these disconnected objects, as you can see that they're just going through memories in some way that are flashing, you know, one after another. Like somebody said, somebody was, like they were thumbing through a deck of cards or something. And they were seeing what this person did in the last few weeks and all that. And then there's other things. Well, first of all, I've also had people describe to me different sensations in their body as these people are inside their minds. You can tell that they're going to different spaces, innervating nerve endings in the spine and this and that. But there's something else that goes on here too, unfortunately. And that is that they can, in fact, stimulate sexual response.
All right, here we go.
Through the eyes, of all things.
And through the eyes, really?
Yeah, through the eyes. This is all done while staring.
Oh, gee, I wish they could pass that talent on.
Yeah. what this is an egg-taking phenomenon. This
right.
is not... whereas when I wrote my first book on the secret life, I thought that they were extremely interested in sexuality
uh-huh.
and all that, the human sexual response. They have no interest in that whatsoever. now that I've learned more, and but it's all about facilitating the taking of ova from women, and how that relates, I do not know.
And sperm from men as well, correct?
Take sperm from men all the time. Take eggs from women all the time. That's all table stuff. That's table procedures. People are never abducted just for table procedures. Well, I shouldn't say never. Most of the time, people are not abducted for table procedures.
All right, and again, there is a chain here in terms of abductions. They frequently begin early in life, or dad had one and now I'm having one. And they continue through life and then even through generations. But if what you're saying now about sperm and eggs is true, that would make sense because they would be tracking and observing their product, their work.
I suppose, but they're taking those sperm and eggs, they're fertilizing them, adding something to them. Maybe it's DNA from aliens, maybe it isn't, I don't know, but they are altering that zygote. They place it back in the woman, and the woman then feels pregnant, is pregnant, and then after a couple of months, the little tiny embryo that is there is removed.
All right. Hold on for 1 second, Doctor. I want to read you and everybody something. This came from a nurse who we are in discussions with now, and for reasons that will be obvious, she wants to remain and will remain anonymous, as will the patient in this case. But I'm beginning to get more of these. This one stands out. Hi, Art. I just wanted to tell you about a patient I recently had in the ER. It was a young mother who had already presented twice previously since confirming pregnancy 10 weeks ago. On those visits, she said she felt uneasy about her pregnancy and was concerned for the baby's well-being. Each time, we did blood work and an ultrasound to confirm that everything was as it should be. On the third visit, she presented to ER stating that she just didn't feel pregnant. And could we please ensure that all things were okay? Upon obtaining blood work, her HCG levels were those of a non-pregnant woman. Her pelvic ultrasound revealed no fetus, no evidence of a recent pregnancy. We knew this was not correct because we had recent ultrasounds showing a live single fetus within the uterine cavity. This time, there was no fetus present. The patient did not report any signs or symptoms of a miscarriage, just simply quit feeling pregnant. She was apprehensive about this pregnancy right from the start, and now the pregnancy had vanished. To a documented and photographed via ultrasound fetus was now missing, no sign of it or where it went. I couldn't help but immediately think of your guest talking about the hybrids. Could this be a case of a pregnancy that was removed from the mother, as your guest had suggested? She sounded eerily familiar. So I got that. When I got it, I called Dr. Jacobs right away, and I said, oh, my God, listen to this. And he said, I've heard it a million times. Right, doctor?
That is correct. That is correct. This is standard. Once they take that altered embryo and put it into the woman's uterus or wherever they're going to put it, they also place it in other areas. That woman will have it removed at around 9 to 12 weeks. And this happens to most women who have ova. And if they've had an oophorectomy, if they've had their ovum removed, then other things are done to them. I mean, they still use them for incubation and for other things. So it doesn't get them out of the woods, so to speak. But this is extremely common. Bud Hopkins first began to study this years and years and years ago, decades ago. And what they're doing here is they are, I'm going to use the probably the correct word here, manufacturing hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
They put these little embryos into tanks and gestate them in tanks. And eventually they are removed, and then the woman is required to hold them from time to time, feed them from time to time. We're not sure whether they're the same babies that they took out of her.
You know, I have heard these stories, Doctor, from women directly. You know, in the interviews that I've done over the years, I've heard these stories. I've even heard women tell me that they were reintroduced to a child they once had. You know, when the child is 3 or 4, they're abducted and actually shown the child. I have no idea why or what it means, but I've heard about that.
Yes, I've heard about that too, but we can't guarantee that is actually their child.
I guess not. In some ways, it's not.
Hey, right. I would assume it's probably not, because I don't know if they keep records. We don't have any evidence of them writing things down anywhere. Well, maybe there are people sometimes who seem to be looking at a clipboard, but a writing.
Well, they may have moved past the pencil.
They might have moved past holding something in their hands, for all we know.
That's right.
But the thing is, though, we don't know how they differentiate between any of the maybe sometimes hundreds of fetuses, babies that they have floating in gestational tanks waiting to be taken out. This is tanks with nutritional material in it, you know, to keep the babies alive, so to speak. They're fed through skin absorption, essentially.
Okay, and these babies, you call them what?
Well, these are all hybrid babies. These are a mixture of alien and human. And so there are different types of hybrids, ones who look really, really quite alien, but then again, not. And when I say alien, I'm using gray aliens as the standard, although they are not the brains behind the whole enterprise. But the gray aliens, everybody knows, everybody loves, and so that's essentially, I think, what's happening with them, but I can't be absolutely sure.
I'm not so sure everybody loves the gray aliens.
Well,
they know about them.
Advertising agencies do, I think, though.
Oh, that's true.
There are ones who, and there's a gradation of children who look really quite grayish, so to speak, and ones who look really quite human. And then there are some who look absolutely human. But there aren't some that look absolutely like gray aliens.
All right. Do these hybrids get returned to Earth despite how they may look?
No, if they're going to be taken to Earth to live here, they must look absolutely human with no distinguishing characteristics whatsoever that would suggest otherwise.
All right, but those are brought back.
Those in recent years are being brought back to live here, yes. I never thought I would say something like that ever in my life. But there it is, and that appears to be true. That's my last book, my latest book, is all about that. And so yes, even now, even after I've done a bunch of interviews about this, it still sticks in my throat a little bit to have to say that.
I understand. What do you imagine, or do you have you heard, or do you know, happens to those that look a little too alien to be returned? I wonder what becomes of them.
Right. The ones who are, for example, what I call early-stage hybrids, who look really alien. They have very, very dark black eyes, but there are whites in the eyes, little bits of whites on either side. They have a little mouth, but it's an actual mouth.
Lord, hold on, Doctor. I don't know where that hour went. You all don't want to go away. Trust me on this. You don't want to go away. Professor David Jacobs is my guest. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay right where you are.
On the wild side of midnight. From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell. Please call the show at 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
So my guest is Dr. David Jacobs. He's back again. We're talking about abductions. We're talking about humans who have been taken, and sexual things have been done to them, not sexual in the terms of sexy sexual, sperm taken from men, ova from women, eggs, and they're doing something with them. They're creating hybrids, and some of those hybrids are being returned to Earth, the ones that look human, the ones that you wouldn't even blink an eye at, are returned to Earth. The others, we don't know, right, Professor?
That's right. Although there's pretty good evidence that they simply become members of the workforce.
Wonderful.
In other words, what you're looking at here is not simply aliens examining us, aliens studying us. This is a workforce borrowed and built through human genes and all that, along with alien genes, if they have such things. And everybody on board a UFO, no matter where a UFO is sighted or what a UFO is, and there are exceptions to that, but everybody on board is working towards a goal. In other words, this is not just a study. They're not examining us. They're not trying to figure out what makes us tick or anything like that. And so this is boiled down to a goal-directed, carefully thought out and expertly done program, ultimately to build hybrids.
Mm-hmm. You told me a story about a case in which a fetus was removed from a woman about the same way, the same kind of story I told you. You might want to repeat that one here if you're able.
This is a woman. I've got a bunch of these, but I think this is the one where a woman had elected to have the pregnancy terminated. She couldn't be pregnant. She couldn't even have imagined how she was pregnant, but she was. She had it confirmed and all the rest of that. And she elected for a termination, and if this is the story that I told you, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on the table, and the doctor was there, and he started the procedure. And he said, and he kind of astonished. He said, "There's no fetus here. There's no." And the nurse who was standing there looked at him and put her finger to her lips and said, "Shh." And the woman who was on the table said, "Huh? What are you talking about?"
Yeah,
she was sort of out of it. And they put her back down, and they continued through the now mock termination procedure because my guess is that everything was a matter of liability at that time, and because they had already told her she was pregnant, and there she is not pregnant. But she didn't know it. There was no expulsion of there was no blood that was there. There was no cramping. There was no nothing like that. Now, I'm not a gynecologist, and I would assume that some gynecologists would say, well, sometimes it happens that way, and it might be, you know, on the toilet, and the person doesn't even know it. That might be possible.
But and I've heard cases of very early-term things being absorbed.
It has to be extremely early term, just a little nodule.
It can't
be, eventually it becomes a foreign body in the person's foreign body in the person's body, and they can't absorb it. They have to just expel it.
How would we even possibly know how many cases in America or worldwide of disappearing fetuses, like the story I read from the nurse here, there are? Could we possibly know that even?
I don't know if there are records of that. I'd be interesting to find out. I would like to know that. It happens to all women abductees who have ova ready to be, you know, ready. Now, when I say it happens to all of them who have ova, well, they all do, because I've had people, kids who are as young as 13 or 14 have eggs taken from them. And it's, along with all this sexual buildup beforehand and everything, for some of them, it ruins their lives. They become sexually attached in a strange way to these gray aliens.
Mm-hmm.
They look for a mate later on who... I had one woman who told me that she saw a guy who was 30 years older than her, or whatever it was, and he was short, he was bald, and he wore big, thick, horn-rimmed glasses. She fell for him. She couldn't control herself. And after she learned about the abduction phenomenon, she realized why. But it was such an odd thing. I mean, she knew it was odd when it was happening, and they got married, and then they lived separately. But the fact was that it was just an uncontrollable impulse in her. But she was an abductee, and that's how it came out. I'm still in contact with her after this story.
All right, let's move through a lot of things fast. How do the abductees describe the way these aliens look?
Well, there's a variety of different aliens on board. There's ones who look insect-like, or insectolins, as I call them in my new book. And they are the ones who are in control. They are the commanders-in-chiefs.
Oh.
They give orders. Everybody else takes orders. They do not come down and do grunt work like taking abductees up to the UFO. They do specialized things. They do some procedures. They will, but they're the ones who everybody obeys, apparently. Off to the side, and I'm going to leave these off to the side, there's a small group of ones who look sort of reptile-like, reptilians or reptilins, as I call them.
Right.
And they do the same procedures that everybody else does for people. I'll talk about them a little bit later if you want. But they are huge on the Internet and not huge with abductees.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's gray aliens who come in two types, tall and small. The taller ones do more of the table procedures and that are more complex. The small ones chauffeur people around from room to room. They come down and they get abductees, bring them back on board. They help them get their clothes on. They get to help them get their clothes off. They're major figures in this because they will do some procedures themselves, but they have their place.
All right.
Then there's a whole range of hybrids who are also in the same business of doing everything that the gray beings do.
Right.
Early stage, middle stage, late stage, mid stage.
All right, so what I was going to ask is, do you know offhand which species, if we can talk about them that way, we are getting our DNA mixed up with up there? Any clue?
You know, I can't absolutely tell you that. We don't know. And here's the problem. We don't know the backstory. We don't know where they are putting the egg and the sperm together and altering it in some way. It's got to be done in an assembly line fashion, because this goes on night and day 24/7, taking eggs and sperm and all of that. This is just constant. And so there has to be an assembly line type of situation with gray aliens or insectolins or reptilins or whatever it is somewhere else, but not in the confines where people are. So Bart Hopkins had one person who said that she saw one of these assembly line type things where they were diddling with the eggs and the sperm. But that's only one person saying that, and you need more than one to have some sort of reality to it.
Sure.
You could have dreamed that or something, you know.
Sure.
So we don't know anything that goes on backstage, oddly enough. Even with people who've had long events, 3 days, 5 days, there's very little backstage that we know. Sometimes they'll know a little bit more, but really very little. Everything is as it should be.
All right, here's a question for you. At what age, generally, doctor, are these hybrids, ones that can be returned to Earth because they look enough like us, at what point are they returned to Earth?
Right. Well, the word "returned" is probably not right. It's set loose on Earth is what it is. They're settling down on Earth. They still live in the UFOs up until they live here. The age is starts around 17, 18. Now, it's impossible to tell because, number one, they do not know their own ages because they are not born. They are just taken out of a gestation tank. And age means nothing up there. They don't have birthdays. They don't celebrate ages. So if they think about it, my guess is between the age of around 17 and 23.
Okay. And they've been in virtually in tanks until that point, or at some point, do they come out of the tanks? Do they go through some sort of... Oh, God, I don't know what the right word is. Briefing procedure. I mean, they've got to be told something about Earth.
Right. Well, we've never seen them actually taken out of tanks, but we see them in various areas of growth. In other words, we see little tiny fetuses. We see them larger and larger and larger. And then people will say, it looks like a baby that's floating in there, you know. Mm. And then they're removed. And I don't know exactly what time. Once again, we don't know the backstory. And they then have a society that they live in on the UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And they learn things about Earth. Even the ones who are not going to be here, to live here, learn things about Earth for reasons that I do not know. And some of them might become part of the workforce as well. And we don't know what happens to all the rest of them who don't measure up
right
to being perfectly normal. We don't know whether they're jettisoned into deep space,
mm-hmm,
or they're used for food or whatever they're used for. We don't know that.
I hope not food.
So do I.
So, they are returned to Earth in increasingly large numbers. And then when they get to Earth, they cannot just simply function, because we are actually a pretty complicated society. And if you haven't lived in it, unless you've lived in an awfully good assimilation of it, you can't function, right, when you get here. So
that is correct. Now, once again, I can't speak for everything that's happening in India, where you have tremendous numbers of people walking around all the time.
Oh, yes.
But in America, it's a very complex society. They learn as much as they possibly can learn from abductees on board the UFO before they get ready to come down.
Mm-hmm.
However, the amount that they learn from abductees is minuscule. infinitesimal compared to what they are required to know when they finally get here. In other words, having to wait for a red light to cross the street.
Yes.
Or how you, what a bottle of Coke is, or a can of Coke, and how do you open the can, and what does it taste like? And these things you can only learn if you're here, because they don't usually take foodstuffs and things like that on board the UFO. So they have a the abductees then take over teaching them when they're here as well, and go with them to different places to teach them what a supermarket is,
mm-hmm.
or what a doctor's office is like, or what a doctor is, and every single thing that they don't have on UFOs, which is almost everything, they have to learn just like they dropped out of the sky from Mars.
Right. And you say it's abductees that teach them.
Abductees teach them. Aliens aren't going to teach them because the aliens don't know either. So their job is not to know. Their job, the gray aliens, for example, is to just do the task that they were bred for, that they were made for. They're single-minded. They have no other function than that, and that's what they do.
All right. You use two terms, hybrids and hybrids, right?
In my latest book called Walking Among Us, which the title describes exactly what's happening, I guess,
mm-hmm.
I say that the ones who are walking among us, who are actually here, who are living here, I call them hybrids, because just to differentiate from hybrids, actually they're hybrids. Actually, they're aliens.
Yeah.
they're all aliens in a way. But the hybrids are so human looking that you cannot differentiate, and therefore, just to make sure that I'm clear about who's who and what's what, I use the word hybrids for the ones who are actually moving in and living here,
right,
and staying overnight in their apartments, that sort of thing. Now, there is one difference between hybrids and humans. They can control us, and we cannot control them. When on board a UFO, all people, all humans are under control for most of the time. Every once in a while, somebody breaks loose and runs down the hallway and all that. But it's unusual, and most of the time, they're under tight control neurologically. Everybody who speaks on the UFO speaks telepathically. There is no sounds. There's no music. There's no patter of people talking. There's no nothing. It's just sort of silent with people shuffling along and instruments clanging and this and that.
Yeah, but if they're ever going to get back here and function, even in a limited way, they have to learn to talk.
They have to learn to talk. They have to learn what music is. They have to learn what writing is. They have to learn everything, everything. And abductees start teaching them on board the UFO, and then when they come down, oftentimes they come down as a child or two with a hybrid caretaker with them, an older caretaker, and they learn about what a kitchen is, and what a refrigerator is, and what a computer is, and what a television is, and what a rug is.
All right. Here's something I want to observe. I have talked to many abductees in my years, and many times, Doctor, there's a physical altercation of some sort. And while we might imagine because they're aliens, they're super strong, fact is, they're really not. And I've talked to people who have pushed the aliens, have punched the aliens, and have otherwise physically assaulted them, and they usually are described as lightweight, not physical at all, and usually can't take a punch.
Yeah, I've had that also. I've had to have them push them, and I had one grab one by the throat. I had one pull away. She was being walked down a hallway with her arms up. They were holding onto her elbows. Two aliens, and she got one elbow loose, and then just brought it forward, and then flipped it back and hit this gray alien in the eye with her elbow, and a white substance came out.
Right.
And they hustled her away, and they said she shouldn't do that. That was bad. That was not good. That was bad. And they put her in stirrups, and then they tied her down, so to speak, to a table. And they were very, very upset, and then they went on with their procedures. But that does happen. It does happen from time to time. But these gray aliens weren't built for strength. They were built because they have certain tasks to do that don't require a whole lot of strength.
Well, I've got a reason for what I said. In other words, if you're going to talk about an invasion, if you're going to talk about a slow but sure invasion of our planet and our species, then, you know, they may have ray guns or who knows what they've got on those ships, but really, they've right now got about 7 billion people, most of them people, I hope, who would fight them and who would cause a lot of trouble for them. We have bombs and missiles and nuclear weapons and a lot more strength physically than they have. So if you want to take over a planet, let's be honest, we're talking here about invasion, this would be the way to do it instead of, you know, the classical Independence Day scenario.
Well, right, exactly. And what you're doing is you're putting down humans, people who look human, who are just average. Average size, average weight, average everything. They might be, ever so slightly naive, but they're humans. And you can't tell. You know, they're doing it in a very intelligent way, and it's taking them a very long time to do it, but that apparently means nothing. Time means nothing. The question then is how long do these beings live? And for gray beings, are they just, you know, they keel over backstage somewhere and they just clone another one and out comes another one. They all look alike. And then there are the insect-like ones, the ones who are calling the shots here. How long do they live? Do they live 10,000 years? Do they live only 500 years? We don't know that. But time apparently means nothing. There's no particular hurry from what I can gather about this.
Apparently not. And again, so that people understand, these hybrids that are returned are in every way that you would see and or hear just like us. One major difference, and that's the difference that I guess would make all the difference, and that is they can control what we think. We were talking about mind control last night, and here's a pretty good example of it. These hybrids have the ability to control what we think. Is that correct, Doctor?
That is correct, and you're putting a light froth on it.
Well, go ahead and put all the icing on you want.
They can make us do whatever they want to make us do. They can make us act in any way they want. They can basically control our functioning, our higher level of functioning and thinking, and they can make us love them and hate them. Whatever it is, they can do it. Now, there are some people who it's much more difficult to do it to. They're resistors. The woman named Karen Morgan, who appeared in all three of my books on abductions, is a resistor from the beginning, and she still resists, but she winds up doing whatever they want anyway. It doesn't matter. But most people are not resistors, and they just go along with whatever is said to them. But the problem is that makes us a second-class species.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. If they can control our thoughts and our actions. Let me ask this. Is there any indication, Doctor, that they are frequently exercising this already? Or do you think when the right moment comes, they begin exercising it in large numbers?
Oh, gosh. Well, that might be the change for all we know, which I haven't talked about yet. But I don't really know. Here's what I do know. All communication is telepathic on board. People are hearing words. They're repeating. They're saying things, and there's back and forths with beings and all that sort of stuff. When they leave, they have totally forgotten that they were abducted, and there is no telepathy. Except every once in a while, because these beings who are here are not perfect, an abductee will still be telepathic when they come back, and it fades after about a week, about 7 days or so, and then it's gone. And they can tell what people are thinking in a room, and they don't like it. They hate it. They don't want it to happen that way. They don't want to be around people then. And I've had several cases of that, and one person complained to me, and I said, just wait it out, and it'll fade, and it does. So that happens. That's a mistake.
All right, what is... I have people calling the show all the time telling me they feel like a singularity is coming, a great change. You use the phrase, the change. What do you mean by that, please?
Years ago, people were describing how these aliens were saying that soon there's going to be a change. Change is coming soon. Soon mm-hmm. everybody's going to be happy. Soon everybody would know their place. Soon it's going to be wonderful, etc. And so, as I think I mentioned to you before, I asked them what they meant by the change, if they knew, and nobody knew.
Well, I'm told all the time that that's when get Windows 10, and then I'll be happy, and all will be well. My computer tells me that every day.
That just happened to me last week, actually, so I have experienced the change.
Yeah.
Then I asked them what soon meant, because if time means nothing, soon might mean in 10,000 years, or it might mean in 10 minutes for all
right,
we know.
Right, of course, yes.
Nobody knew the answer to that either.
But it is your contention that this taking of that which is most precious to us, our youngsters, in the womb, is going on massively, and it's an ongoing thing, and these humans are being replaced by hybrids who can control us. So if that isn't an invasion, I don't know what is, and that's why when you got on here the first time and talked about it, I finally said, well, my God, you're talking about an invasion, and I think you said you said it, I didn't.
That's right. It is that. It really is that. This is an existential threat. This is a threat to all humanity. It's a global phenomenon. It's not just us here in the United States. And people, you can't imagine how many emails I get from people from around the world filling out a questionnaire that I have on my website talking about all these unusual things that have happened to them that don't happen to non-abductees. And the numbers that are out there in terms of how many people are abductees is enormous. It's a small percentage of the population. Bud Hopkins and I, you know, figured out it was 2% through the Roper polls, you know, asking questions about certain questions that they which would indicate that they were abductees. But they use 6,000 people to answer these questions. Their plus minus on this for error rate was only 1.4%, which is very, very, very low. And we figured out, after cooking the numbers down so that they were more realistic, we figured out that about 2% of the American people were abductees. Well, 2% of 330 million is one hell of a lot of people.
Yes, it is. And what bothers me is, we're taking a break here, Doctor, that... You know, when it gets right down to it, there'll only be the change. No fight, just a change.
You keep saying you got something for me.
I'm going to want to fight, I think.
Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been.
Midnight in the desert doesn't screen calls. We trust you, but remember, the NSA. Well, you know. To call the show, please dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
All right, we are going to open the lines now. That number again, the national number, area code 952-225-5278. Oh, by the way, some news that's breaking across some parts of the Internet that Putin may have made a veiled nuclear threat against the Islamic nation. That would not be good. We have other lines that you can use. You can, of course, come to us on Skype. I'd love to have you do that. And I think most of you by now know how to use Skype, right? We are MITD51 for North America, Canada, and America. And outside of North America, we are MITD55. That's MITD55. Other lines you can use if you are so inclined. We have a first-time caller line, area code 775-285-5800. Easy enough. If you've never called the show, we kind of reserve that away for people who are new. Area code 775-285-5800. Roswell is an avenue you can also enter into. I'm going to give you that number now. It routes through Roswell, New Mexico. Kind of appropriate, I think, right? Area code 575-208-7787. Again, area code 575-208-7787. My guest is Dr. David Jacobs, and what he's saying is nothing less than startling, and I want to talk just for a moment about the change. Doctor, the world surely is in difficult straits right now. There's no question about that. There's always the possibility that we will somehow destroy ourselves. It's always looming, it seems, over our heads. I wonder if such an event were pending or likely that you believe that they would use what they already have in place, these hybrids, and they would simply project changes to our minds to stop it all and perhaps hurry their agenda along, whatever in God's name that is.
Well, once again, these are hypothetical questions that are really tough to know. I don't know if they have any knowledge of the politics of the society, or the international politics of the society, of the world, rather. From what I can gather, they have no knowledge of the name of the country that they're living in. They have to be told that. I mean, the level of knowledge that hybrids have is extremely small. What's going on in the insect-like ones, in the insectoid spines, that I don't know. My guess is that if they can just hold out and we don't destroy ourselves in the meantime, that we will be working, they will be, in fact, in control of governmental activities.
Sure. Sure. In other words, if they have the ability to control our thoughts, control our actions, then they could either, I suppose, propel us towards something awful, although one cannot imagine what earthly reason they would have for doing that. I would think that they would propel us toward, their own, whatever their goals are.
Yeah, it's also certainly possible that as second-class species, we would be living under the control of these aliens and not our own governments anymore. That control would shift. But who knows? I do not understand. And I don't really know what the change is either. And it's something that so many people have talked to me about. Nobody knows. The change could be the change of ownership of the planet, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, exactly. The change of ownership of the planet. Better way to take over a planet than what we've been talking about tonight? You don't need the big guns. You don't need the big anything. You just slowly substitute us for them, and I refer to the hybrids, until there are sufficient numbers of them to simply accomplish what they want to accomplish. Boom.
Exactly right. Now, there have been disturbing things about this that I've heard for years and years, and I could never quite figure out how or why or what, but this certainly might play a part in it. People have been told sometimes that in the future, you're going to have a task. In the future, you're going to, you'll know when the task, you have to do the task, and they will tell them sometimes what the task is. And you, a lot of people have told me this off-the-wall story, that they will be standing on a sidewalk while a group of angry or disturbed or confused or frightened humans are running down the street. And their job is to manage crowd control, is to say everything is okay, everything is fine, just keep moving in this direction,
right.
Just keep moving in this direction. And in one of these accounts that I heard, they were all moving towards a flying saucer, a UFO, a space traveling vehicle. And that was one of the more disturbing ones that I heard. But that was, that's one of the most common things that I hear from people. And it's such an odd thing to say, you know, if you're trying to make something up. How would you even think of something like that, that would be your job later on, you know? You think a job would be something like the protecting, or something like protecting aliens, or helping the aliens out with their procedures, or whatever it is.
Okay, know? Doctor, I really, really, really want to go to the phones, but one more question for you, and then we will. And that, okay. Is there among aliens, a lot of people wonder this, is there a pecking order, is there a hierarchy?
Yes, the insect-like ones are at the top. When they first came, they had to have beings with them who would go down and get people, because they don't go down and abduct people. So they brought a small workforce with them of other aliens who I think are the reptilians, the reptilian ones. Then, after they got eggs and sperm and all the rest of the stuff, they created the gray aliens. So they're next on the pecking order, probably with the reptilians. And then comes the various hybrids. Now, it's not that authority flows downward and people have lower statuses. It's just that they have different tasks. They have different jobs. They're built, literally built for to do different things.
Well, do you believe that they are cooperative with each other, or toward a common goal, meaning us, or do you think there are differences among them, as there are differences among nations here on Earth?
No, there are different. For example, gray aliens sometimes will get into a discussion about doing a specific procedure. Most of the time, they just do it. But sometimes there's a question of if they should do it or not. That might be the only disharmony that I've seen. Most of them just do what they're supposed to do, and they do it 24/7.
Yeah.
There's no indication that they sleep. Hybrids, the more they become human, the more they differ, the more they can get sometimes into little arguments and things like that. But they're still all under control, and it really is a different species, and so the pecking order isn't exactly the way you would think of it. It's just that everybody knows their place.
Okay. All right. Let's go outside the country. Johnny, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen. Dr. Jacobs, I understand that because you've done this research over many, many years, over so many subjects that you've come across, you've got like a video recorder of events that seems to be recorded by all walks of life from all cultures. And so my question is, with that so much data and storage of information, have you been able to pass this information on as a sense of intelligence, to be able to share it with other people that can somehow decipher, you know, do we have an age of what aliens, age group they're coming to? Are they going to be like troopers? Things like this. And my other question was that in the Bible, it mentions that there will be indemnity between them.
Johnny, those are very different questions. Hold on, let's get the answer to number one.
Well, the first one is, is there anybody in the scientific, academic, or governmental communities who is interested in this subject? There are a few people. not in the numbers that it would take to really tackle the subject. And in most countries, there's nothing. And most of the UFO organizations in other countries focus on the outside shells of objects. They focus on people seeing UFOs and not on the abduction phenomenon. In other words, not what's going on inside the objects. Even though there are people who who say that they've been abducted in countries around the world. In terms of the federal government, I don't know, but my guess is that nobody cares whatsoever about this subject. My sense is that you have to have a group of scientists of very, very serious quality, serious, big-time scientists, internationally known Nobel winners and all the rest of that, who sign a letter saying that this needs to be studied by the government. And maybe that would push people off the dime a little bit. But it is so off the wall. It's so crazy. It's so unlikely, and it's all done in secret, and people don't know that they're abductees, and then they suddenly do know it, and this and that.
But my question, Dr. Jacobs, is with the subjects and all these subjects that you have, are any of those prepared to come forward and disclose so that we can watch and hear these hypnotic regressions and hear what these people are saying, so that the public can make up their own mind and maybe between us we can use intelligence in that way to maybe come to some other understanding. But to go back to my other question, Dr. Jacobs, it was regarding, in the Bible it mentions an indemnity that would be put between them and us, and I assume it's in the spirit, in the life force, which I believe is where God resides with us. You know, when we die on the earth as a bit of meat or back to the dust, as they say, but the spirit is a continuum, and I believe that is the breath of life of God for my personal saviour. But for you, sir, I ask you, you know, do you have a spiritual belief that this is some sort of spiritual battle to come? What is your personal value on it? Do you believe in some saviour for yourself, a God for your family?
Well, in terms of the abduction phenomenon and the aliens, I don't see them as being spiritual people in any way, shape, or form, or understanding even what that is. They don't seem to have anything that has to do with intellectualism and emotion.
That's really going to scare people to suggest that they have no spiritual center whatsoever. Really scares people.
That's right. Now, the ones who are hybrids, who are moving in, have the apparatus to be that way, I think. I don't think it's going to work on them. I don't think they will become religious or spiritual or anything. But they have become, they become more human-like after they're here for a while. And therefore, they have a tendency to be kinder, to be more. It's hard to explain this. To have more of
empathy,
of an emotional sense, at least.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want to make an appeal right now, and that is, most of you heard or will hear on repeat the letter I read from the nurse about this lady whose fetus disappeared. 10-week fetus just flat disappeared. Now, I understand that there are privacy issues. I understand, as I mentioned to you, we're talking to her. We're trying to get permission from the patient, but it's not an easy thing to do. People don't want to talk about this. It's the last thing in the world they want to talk about. But I am making an appeal. If you're a healthcare worker who has experienced this, much as the doctor talked about it earlier, remember that? That might not be all that common, or it might be, I don't know, but if you've lost a fetus in that area, and you said it was between, or around 10 weeks, but between what and what, doctor?
I'm going to say between 9 and 12, just to get
12, okay.
A span.
All right, I would like contact, I really would. The only way to move forward with this and to gather proof is if all of you help. And so, if you have experienced something like this, either as a healthcare worker or as and experiencer, please get hold of me. I am KNYE at KNYE.com. Let me give that again. KNYE. That's Kilowatt Nancy Yokohama Easy. People get dyslexic with it. Don't do that. It's KNYE at KNYE.com. I would really, 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 or you know what else? Artbell at KNYE.com. Either one of those two email addresses will get to me. So either healthcare workers or women who are willing to discuss this, I think it's time. If this is real, we've got to begin building proof. And I guess that's where you begin. I have you thought about how to build proof, doctor?
You know, the proof is a tough one. Proof is ultimately getting a film in some way, following an abductee around, seeing when that abductee hooks up with a known hybrid.
Yes.
And filming them from various different angles with different people who have no knowledge of this abductee but who are wearing wires near them. And because when they're in public, they talk out loud. Otherwise, it would draw attention to themselves. So, the best way is to just bug people's homes with videos and have their permission, and see what happens in the middle of the night or when people aren't around. When you know if they're living in if they don't work, what happens to them during the day and all that.
Sure.
And there's ethical problems here. There's
of course, of course.
Problems.
I know that. I know.
The main thing is...
Listen, I talked to this nurse, and she said, oh, no, you know, I would lose my livelihood, my license. It would be gone instantly. So we simply asked her, next time this lady comes in, this particular case, would you please have her contact us? Now, the odds are probably pretty low of that, but it's worth a shot. Real quickly on the phone, hello, you're on the air. Hello there, Bloomington something, I think. Going once.
Yeah, I have a question for the doctor.
Yes, go ahead.
Where do people get the Martian alien look form from? I heard you say they look like humans, right?
No, the ones that come down here, what he said was the ones that do come down here, the hybrids that get returned to Earth, look every bit as human as I hope you do, sir.
Exactly. So where did the Martian figures come from?
We didn't mention Martian, did we?
No, but I mean, there's lots of people out there that say their alien encounters, they've seen a Martian instead of a human figure.
Oh, I see. Well, so you mean just to say alien as opposed to Martian, I think. The ones that end up looking somewhat alien don't get returned to Earth. The doctor thinks they may be either disposed of or serving in a workforce.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for the call.
There's actually a reason to think that has logic to it. And that is about the workforce situation. The population is exploding.
Oh, it is. You're right about that. 7 billion, doctor. Hold on. We're short break. Short break. National number 952-225-5278. You tell me, folks. Is this a better way to take over a planet? Or do you expect large saucers, death rays, exploding cities, that kind of thing? I think this is the way you would do it. I wonder when the change is coming.
Is midnight in the desert. To call the show, if you're east of midnight, call 1-952-CALL-ART. If you're west of midnight, call 1-952-225-5278.
And I've got to get Ross back to work. Sorry about that. First time caller line. We've got it. And it is area code 775-285-5800. If you've never called the show, feel free. 775-285-5800. Or the Roswell entrance. That's area code 575-208-7787. Again, 575-208-7787. Skype, of course, at MITD51 for North America and MITD55 for the rest of the world. Doctor, welcome back. So many people that want to speak with you. Let's go here, wherever here is. You're on the air. On the phone, you're on the air. It says San Diego, I think, or something like that. Are you there? Going once? Going twice? Go on. Las Vegas, you're on the air. Hello.
Welcome. From KBET in Las Vegas. Art, I'd like to ask the doctor a question about these insect critters. Are they, what kind of insects could he tell us what they might look like? Are they like bees?
Okay, it's a good question. It's a fair enough question. People try to imagine when you say insectoid, what. Go ahead, doctor.
Most people describe them as looking like, sort of like praying mantises. They have a triangular-shaped head. The eyes point straight down. There's no mouth to speak of, from what I can gather. There's no ears, there's no nose or anything like that. And they're very, very thin. Sometimes they wear robes, of all things. I do not know why, but people will report this every once in a while. And sometimes these robes have, like, high collars on the back of their necks. I don't understand it. Because aliens don't have a sense, because everything is telepathic, they don't have a sense of music, they don't have a sense of beauty, they don't have a sense of art, literature, they don't have a sense of anything like that. So everything inside is sterile. And the way that hybrids dress while on board is extremely plain. A beige pair of pants for the males and a pullover shirt, a beige dress for the females with three-quarter length sleeves, and that's it.
Okay. And, how tall are they?
The ones who are the insectoids, the praying mantises, are probably the tallest, and the shortest are the short aliens at probably about 3.5 feet tall. The taller aliens would maybe be 4.5 to 5 feet tall, maybe a little bit more. The hybrids, the ones who are moving in, are I think around 5'9". Right at the average.
Right at the average. Caller, anything else?
Thank you, Art.
You're very welcome. Take care. Skype, you're on the air with Dr. Jacobs. Hi. Hello? Sherellen, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Hi, Art.
Yeah, that, when I say you're on the air, you know, you have to go.
I'm sorry. I didn't know. This is my first time calling on Skype.
Well, welcome. It sounds great.
Thank you. Great. Well, I wanted to ask Dr. Jacobs, who takes care of these hybrids or hybrids when they're here? And, I mean, how do they maintain themselves? Do they have a job? I mean, it's crazy to learn the English language, let alone, you know, sustain themselves here. Who takes care of them, watches them, or whatever?
Or other languages, because it's not just America, right, Doctor?
It is a global phenomenon, and we only talk about it in America because we know more about it here than anywhere else. But they maintain themselves with the tutelage of the abductees. Their abductees' jobs becomes taking care of the hybrids, making sure that they fit into the society, teaching them how to cook, teaching them how what an egg is, teaching them all sorts of things about how to live here. It takes a long time. They are very, very, very quick learners. There is no indication right now that they have a any other language other than the language of the country that they're in. You know, here's the oddity. People will overhear gray aliens talking on board a ship. Let's say they're lying on a table and they can, and I say, well, what are they talking about? And they'll say, well, they're talking about doing something, they're blah, 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 blah. But the point is that they're hearing it in English. My guess is that every person in every country hears it in the language of which they speak.
Telepathy.
Telepathically, right.
Yes.
So the question then is there an alien language at all? I mean, how do we get to that? Because whenever you hear grunts and squeaks, you'd think that if they're talking among themselves, that they wouldn't be speaking so that the person could understand English and tap into them.
All right.
Well, but what my question is how do they maintain themselves once they're here? What do they do? Do they work? How do they fit into society?
Right, right. The best way I can say it is that in this book of mine, Walking Among Us, there's one episode in there where a group of hubrids came back to the ship, and there was and they stood around as if it were a cocktail party, except that it wasn't, and they mingled with abductees who had helped them when they were growing up, and they were telling them how well they were doing, and this one woman reported that there were several of them had jobs. The jobs were essentially interns learning how to do a job. That was their job. They liked it a lot. It was extremely interesting, and they were really having, it was really good, it was really fine, and they and all that. But they can do pretty much whatever they want to do. If they want to eat something and they need money to pay for it, they can do it two ways. They can simply go to a bank and ask for money, or go to the abductee and just ask for money, but I don't exactly say ask, I just mean take it.
Remember, they control our thoughts, they control actions.
Yeah, there's a story in the book where a guy walks into a clothing store because he was wearing the wrong clothes for something, and he walks out with an article of clothing. He walks right past the cashier who's standing there, and he nods to her. She nods to him. Hey, everything is fine.
Keeps on going.
The woman who was at behind the cashier, it did not occur to her that he was walking out with this unpaid for, even though he watched her do it. She watched him do it. So, now, how they're eating, I am not sure. I know how they're eating when they're with abductees, but how they're eating alone, we can't tell. Don't know yet. In other words, and here comes a little keg in the works, a kink in the works, rather. If it was a keg, I guess they'd be drinking a lot of beer, but if it's not, the fact is that maybe they go up to the UFO from time to time to get nourishment. We don't know that. However, we do know that abductees have come to their apartments, made them food, showed them how to make food, showed them how to store food, and all that sort of thing. And we do know that they've gone to restaurants and have eaten food in restaurants with abductees.
Probably going out without paying, just walking past, I'm sure.
Well, if the abductee is there, they will remind them that they have to pay.
Oh, that's right. They're teaching them. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
All right, you're very welcome, ma'am. Thank you for calling and using Skype, by the way. Thank you very much. All right, so here's somebody on my computer screen through the wormhole. It says, Art, but how do they get legal identity? They need an ID, credit cards, all the identity stuff that modern society requires. How do the hubrids get that? Fake papers or what?
Right. We don't know that. Don't know that. Except that if they learn to drive a car, we know that they learn to drive cars. That's not uncommon at all.
Right.
If they're stopped by a police officer for an infraction. The police officer, what, they over them, they'd roll down the window, and the police officer would think, oh, this person did not commit an infraction. I guess I must have been mistaken, and that will be the end of that.
Another talent that I'd like to acquire.
Right, but other credit cards, I don't know if they, how they do that, or if they just use an abductee's credit card, or if they tell the abductee to use a credit card, or if they just have enough cash on them for whatever they want to buy.
And then I would presume, in the case of the store clerk, for example, that just let them walk out with whatever they've got, the store clerk would have no memory of that act, what she just did. She might later notice something's missing, but she wouldn't even know she did it, right?
That's probably true. She would not have questioned the idea that the person walked out without paying. It would not have occurred to her to question it.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I can't believe I got on.
But yet you have.
Yes, I have. I don't know if they're really questions, but maybe just discussion points.
Okay.
I have two of them here. And the first one is it's a real scary thought. If they can control our minds and everything already,
mm-hmm.
who is to say that there's no way in fighting these aliens, these beings?
Well, wait a minute. That's a good question. Is there any way to fight this at all, Doctor?
I don't know. I keep saying I don't know, I don't know, I don't know.
If you don't know, I appreciate you saying you don't know. I worry about people I have on who have answers for everything.
Here is one situation. In order to control us neurologically, the question is, can that be done if a person is wearing a helmet or a hat that covers their entire head or something like that? We don't know that, and there's a guy named Mike Mencken who makes hats, and people swear that they're not abducted if they have these special Velostat-lined hats on. And you can't do that all day long, every day, 24 hours a day, but he might be onto something, and abductees say that works, but even then it's difficult to tell because most abductees don't know when they're abducted. All they know is that they feel tired in the morning, and that's it. But we need intelligent people who can sit down and think of the weaknesses of this phenomenon. Now, this is a clandestine phenomenon. It is secret. It is kept secret from everybody. Nobody knows. That is extremely clever, extremely good. It allows them to do everything. But, in a way, it also shows weakness. There's a weakness there.
Somewhere. I hope so.
We can only hope.
Yeah, we can only hope is right.
Exactly right. And so what that weakness is, we're not sure of, and we need to have people who are a lot smarter than me, and lots of them, who can sit down and deal with this problem. And right now, there's a handful of people who are concerned with this in the country. It's awful. It's astounding.
I totally agree.
How little the scientific and economic community are concerned with it.
Caller, anything else?
Yes, I have another one here, which goes back to some of your older shows.
Sure.
We've had shows with time travelers come and speak. Maybe the next time you have one, maybe you can bring up this subject, and maybe they know something from the future that we could use in our defense.
Well, I'll keep that in mind should I run across a time traveler. But, what the doctor is describing is insidious. It is simple. It is effective. Again, they're not physically strong creatures, actually, but they've got a planet of 7 billion people to control. Now, how do they do that? Well, I think all evening long, the doctor has been explaining that. The only question that I have is when the change comes. And I guess that's just plain has to be open-ended, right, Doctor?
In anything. It could make this suddenly a superiority in numbers. that the number of them are so great eventually that they just naturally take over, and maybe it's only a 10-to-1 ratio, or a 100-to-1 ratio, and they could easily take over in some way. We don't know the whys and the wherefores of this. The only ones who know that for sure are the ones who are the leaders.
Professor, is there any indication they can control large numbers of people, or is it one at a time?
It depends on what you mean by large numbers. In other words, on board a UFO, there might be maybe as many as 50 abductees. Well, in a room, there might be 100 tables, might be 100 abductees. All of them are under control. Now, are they all under control by smaller groups of gray aliens or whatever? That's hard to tell. But they can control at least abductees en masse. Can they control humans en masse? Don't know. Once again, we don't know.
Okay.
My guess is they probably can eventually.
All right, and for the record, I've got what I consider to be a legitimate time traveler coming up pretty soon. On Skype, you're on the air with Dr. Jacobs. Hi.
How you doing?
Doing okay, sir.
Question for Dr. Jacobs.
Okay.
What about people like in prison that are locked down in a cell? Has anybody ever been abducted?
Yes, I do get letters from abductees who are in jail.
Really?
For personal reasons, I don't usually respond to them.
I understand.
What's that?
I understand.
Well, no, this is personal reasons that have to do with my family and so forth.
Okay.
Not my immediate family, but they have. The question is, when there's a guard who comes around to check to see whether they're there or not, is there a small gray alien standing in the cell controlling that guard who looks in and says, "Oh, nothing here, everything is fine, no problem," and goes on to the next cell? That would be the only way that they could do it, because there's checks all the time, I would assume, to see whether the prisoners are asleep or not and all that. If they're missing during the daytime, that would be noticed.
Indeed so. All right, I want to move along here. Atlanta, Georgia, I think you're on the air with Dr. Jacobs.
Hey, Art. I just had a small request. If you could maybe play some pan flute music that I know you probably have.
I do have. Anything else?
No, that's it. Just many Roswells to you. You know, love the show. First time caller here.
Aren't you at all concerned about the possibility of, I mean, I appreciate your music request, don't get me wrong, but we're talking about the invasion of Earth here, so.
Right.
But you'd like to hear some pan flute music before that happens.
Well, to me, my mind goes straight to, you know, like vampirism or, you know, something like that, to where they're, you know, like preying on us.
Well, I think Dr. Jacobs does not think that they have good intentions toward us. Now, what they will do with us and the world after the change comes, so-called change, we have no way of knowing. Right, Doctor?
That's exactly right. They don't tell abductees, and therefore we don't know. Abductees, hubrids who live here don't know any of this stuff either. All they know is that their task is to live here. They're concentrated on being human, on living here, on meeting people of the opposite sex, of this and that. They're humans for all intents and purposes. And but why they're here is that's their task.
Well, all right, here's a big one for you. So let's assume an integrated hubrid, right?
Yeah.
Is that hubrid likely to, I don't know if I ought to use the word fall in love with, obtain an Earth person for a mate? And if so, where does the reproduction go there?
Yeah, the question is this. If a hubrid mates with an abductee or a non-abductee, what is the offspring going to be like?
Yes. Now,
and so far, I have not uncovered any instances of that. In other words, abductees have not come to me and said that they're pregnant from a hybrid. To me, but I know that this is what I wrote years ago in the threat in my second book, The Threat. What we see here with human-like hybrids who are not going to be living here, but who are around abductees all the time, something I call personal project hybrids, they meet when they are young, and mm-hmm. the hybrid takes on a person for life, basically. Uh-huh. It's a personal project. The hybrids themselves said that you're going to be a personal project of mine. At least that was their interpretation of it. And so... And we know that sex takes place, and we know that the woman does get pregnant, and then the little embryo is removed. Fine. And what that does is it bypasses the whole process of having to take an egg and then alter it and then put it back in, you know, but it doesn't alter the process of taking it out. So that does happen. Now, is that going to happen with hybrids? I don't know. And it's possible that the children that are born will just live here and just be human and just learn everything normally like humans do. But once again, we don't know that yet.
Doctor, are there procedures beyond the table?
Well, what happens after a person gets off the table is that invariably they go in and start dealing with hybrids. This is a one-note theme, you'll notice. they hold babies. They have to have skin-on-skin contact with babies. Sometimes the babies are really ugly babies, as they tell me, and sometimes they're not bad-looking babies. They're kind of cute. When they play with, they teach little kids how to play also with little kids have their own toys that the aliens or the hybrids made for them. The toys, and I actually wrote an article, if you can imagine this, on hybrid toys and games. Of all the darn things in the world to do, I mean, it's such an odd phenomenon, and there's so many different facets to it. I got fascinated by toys. And these toys are controlled by people's minds. The kids can make the little ball fly up in the air.
Wow.
And come back down, or other objects go up into the air, or they can look at books, and the books have images in them that look like 3D or 4D or 9D or whatever it is, but it looks like reality, and they have all these different sort of things that they play with.
Well, I guess learning control begins early.
Right.
By the way, my wife tells me there's no such thing as an ugly baby. I know better than that. Logan...
There is. If you see a baby as fat, half alien, half not, you'll know right away.
I understand. Logan, you're on the air.
How's it going? Can you hear me?
You sound way too loud. Back away a little bit.
Okay. What about now?
Better.
I have two questions for Dr. Jacobs.
Okay.
The first one is... if this is true, then surely our government and several others know about it. What are they doing, to his knowledge, to combat it?
Very, very good question. Pause now, please. Doctor, you know, what he says is a good point. Surely the government must be, at some level, aware of the agenda and what's going on. What do you say?
Well... This, and I've gone round and round about this for years and years and years and years. And the answer is I have not yet been convinced, although some people have put up good arguments that I hadn't thought of before, but I am not yet convinced that they know anything at all about this subject. I keep getting information about how the government is studying UFOs, they're compiling data on UFOs.
Right.
Well, if they're compiling data on UFOs, they have no idea what they're doing, and they know nothing about the subject whatsoever because they're concerned with the outside shells of objects as opposed to what's going on inside. Who are the beings inside? What are they up to? Why are they here? What's the program? This and that. That's the only thing that matters. Why are they here? Their propulsion, where they're from, how they get here, all that sort of stuff, that doesn't mean anything. The only thing that has serious meaning to our existence is what's in these beings' minds, what are they going to do with us? Therefore, they would be debriefing abductees 24/7. They would have been doing it for decades.
Right.
And we have no indication that that's going on at all.
All right, Logan, anything else?
Yeah, my second question was just if we were going to try to do something about it, what should our scientists here on Earth be, what kind of technology should we be researching to attempt to do anything?
Okay, all right. Well, it's a good question. I'm not sure it's going to get a really good answer, but...
we can't do anything about technology. Their technology is too advanced. There's no way that we can do it. The only thing we can do is figure out how to stop abductions. Do it on our level, figure out who abductees are, if that's at all possible, because most abductees don't know that they're abductees. And, it's a secret phenomenon. It's clandestine. And the first way you keep it secret is by keeping it secret from the abductee, obviously.
Sure.
So, but they have to figure out a way to protect abductees, and that would mean protect everybody. So since they don't know who abductees are, then everybody in the whole country, everybody in the entire world or whatever would have to wear a special gear, a special thing on their heads, whatever it is, to prevent the abduction phenomenon. That's the only way that I can think of it. I have trouble working a toothbrush. So I'm not a technician. I'm not a scientist. I don't know what they would come up with, but the fact is that.
Well, doctor, I'll see if I can find an abductee to help you with that tooth problem. You're on the air. I don't need to hear that.
He's bright, but who cares?
Yeah. Hi there. You're on the air with Dr. Jacobs.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, great show, Art.
Thank you.
Within the last approximately 15 to 16 years ago, I had an opportunity to talk to an individual who was a personal bodyguard to an extremely high federal official.
Okay.
And I talked to this person after midnight at this friend's location somewhere here in California. And first we talked to him, and by the way, I'm not going to give you specifics, but I'm going to whet your appetite with facts. I asked this individual how he thought the U.S. would do if we ever engaged in a major war like with Russia or China. And his response was...
Hold his response, okay? We've got a break. We've got to do it, so hold that thought. And you can lay it on us when we get back. In the meantime, here's some flute for you before the takeover. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, you're listening to Midnight in the Desert. I'm Art Bell.
Set in the dark, stays in the dark. Call Midnight in the Desert at 1-952-CALL-ART. That's 1-952-225-5278.
And, of course, the Skype entrance points, MITD51 in North America, MITD55 rest of the world. And the first-time caller line, let me keep giving that out till I can enlist Ross to help. Area code 775-285-5800. My guest is Dr. David Jacobs. We're talking about nothing less than the takeover of the world, an invasion of the world, a quiet invasion of the world. No pushing, no shoving, no shooting, just a complete takeover. That's the scary part of it. Caller, you're back on the air with Dr. Jacobs.
Okay, I'm going to backtrack a little bit and let you know that this is for real. At my friend's location, the father of this individual who was protecting an extremely high federal official, he had pictures on the wall of his son inside the private jet of this official, as well as on the tarmac at the airport, multiple photos, right? So I know this is no BS. So when I asked him, what do you think, how do you think the U.S. would fare in a major engagement with Russia or China or both? And he said, believe me, he said, if it comes to a point where they start pushing buttons, he said, you would not want to survive. He said the living would envy the death.
Yes. We know that. Nuclear war, radiation. Yes.
So in the middle of the conversation, this guy never cracked a smile. He was dead serious the whole time. All of a sudden, he changes the subject. He's got a bizarre look on his face and in his eyes, like he got spooked, like he had come in contact with something that literally shook him, rattled him, like shell shock from a combat veteran.
Right.
And he says to me off the wall, he says, if you saw what I saw, your mind would not be strong enough to handle it. And I, at the time, like approximately within the last 15 years, I said, well, I don't see how that could be because, you know, I'm a combat veteran and I've seen some horrendous things that would drive a lot of people into some, you know, bad, very bad things. I said, I don't see how that could be possible. So he looked at me and stares me with the, once again with a bizarre look in his eyes and on his face, and he says these words. He says, once again, if you saw what I saw, your mind would not be strong enough to handle it. So I said, you know, I just cannot understand what you're talking about. You know, I'm taking this.
So did he finally cough up what he meant?
So this is the finale. So I said, you know, giving him all the respect, I said, sir, could you give me an idea, a general idea of what you saw? End of conversation, not one further word. That was it. And I am convinced now, looking back, and I've had a lot of time to review this in my mind over and over again, this man was sworn to secrecy. He went to locations around the country and probably around the world that nobody gets to see with this extremely high federal official. And my opinion is he saw the unthinkable, something like from another world that shook him, rattled him, and this man was not the same, and he wanted to tell somebody.
Okay, well, I get it, and thank you for the call. It may well be that he had contact from some sort of alien or some sort of, who knows, but people do get affected like that, and I think that what Dr. Jacobs is saying is that when the change comes, a lot of people are going to have these sudden, what's the right way to put it, epiphanies? No, not really. They're simply going to change their behavior immediately, Doctor?
Well, I think that when the change comes, if we're not in the change already, but if the change, when the change comes, it might come suddenly in some way, or it might come gradually. But what it is, what it means, I think, ultimately, is that humans will be just relegated to a second-class position, maybe even gotten rid of, for all I know, and that this planet will no longer belong to human beings. It will belong to them for reasons that are unknown. But the thing is about abductions is that they start in very early age, and they continue with great frequency all the way into old age, into probably the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, it's not a one-stop event. It's a series of events that affects a person's life, whether they know it or not. People who don't know it know that they lead odd lives, that they have missing time sequences of a couple of hours, and they can't account for where they were or anything about it. They know that they've seen dead people have come back to them to say goodbye after they've been dead for 9 or 10 years.
Just one quick question, Doctor. All the people out there listening right now, do you think that any of them are abductees? And if so, listening to you now, do you think they realize it? Do you think they know they're abductees? Do you think they know they're part of this bigger plan? And
well, knowing you're an abductee is big enough for most people. And what happens? What happens is they'll read something. And they'll realize, oh my God, this is me. This has been happening to me. Yeah. Now I understand it.
Right.
Or they'll see a picture. When Whitley Strieber came out with his book Communion, which mm-hmm. had a sort of a picture of a gray alien, although it was not what gray aliens look like, but it was close enough. It rattled people. Hundreds, thousands of people wrote to UFO researchers saying, "I know this alien. This, you know,
right.
I've been with him or whatever." I've had people who told me that they saw that book and they picked up the book to look at it and they saw the cover and then they just threw it across the room. You know, they have these visceral reactions to it.
Oh, I know. Whitley is a very close friend of mine. He's been going through a lot of grief lately. I'm going to have him back on. But I had him on, and he described the entire procedure to me on the phone. And I'm here to tell you, Doctor, what he went through and what he described was embarrassing. It was an anal probe, and he has never heard the end of it and the jokes, all the jokes that people have made about it. But he told that story nevertheless. He was actually crying on the air. It's very embarrassing, yeah. But you know, you want to tell the truth. When you tell this story, you want to tell the truth, and he did.
That's right. He sort of made the anal probe famous, actually. And people do have that from time to time. Once again, we don't know why, what it's for, what they're doing there. One time I figured something. I figured two things out in the actual examination. I figured out that they take their finger and their thumb and they place it on the top of a person's backbone, and they just go down the backbone, finger and thumb, tracing through all the vertebrae.
Mm-hmm.
And then with special attention to the coccyx, and then back up again. And I had no idea what that was. It made no sense to me. It happened to Barney Hill, of all people.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times.
All right, so many people want to talk to you. Jim on Skype, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Doctor, I have a question for you, and actually, Art, you would be interested in this also as an amateur radio operator.
Okay.
It's been suggested to me that as far as mind control is concerned, that they use radio frequency in some fashion superimposed over all of our television, radio, media of all kinds, and I'm just wondering if you had heard anything about that.
Okay.
I have not heard. I've not heard anything at all about that, about future decisions and future events to happen. I don't know why they would want to do that if they're moving in and they go to Walmart and they buy a television, you know, with an abductee.
Okay. All right. Let me ask something. I interviewed a number of people about the HARP project, Doctor, and there was a mind control aspect to it. They were convinced, and I think they perhaps even proved that they could bounce a signal off the ionosphere and cause an opposing army to be confused, cause an opposing army to be basically dysfunctional, and obviously an easy kill at that point. So, you know, our government certainly has played in that arena. Very quickly, I think Indio, California. Hello.
Hey, Dr. Jacobs. I just got a quick story of I actually had an encounter of what I believe was hubris at the grocery store. It freaked me out.
Really?
Yeah, okay. So what happened was I just went in to get some, you know, basic stuff. I saw a taller individual that was skinnier and a normal-looking, you know, more human, you could say, individual. The taller one was kind of androgynous. Anyways, they were basically going item by item, even ordinary things, bananas, strawberries, milk, that anybody would know, but they were, you know, teaching them about it. I kind of started following them through the store, you know what I mean? Wasn't really trying to make myself known, but after a while, they caught on, they turned around and kind of looked at me, and I left. I didn't really think about it till, you know, I thought about the second time, last time Dr. Jacobs was on, and I was like, oh my God, that was probably a hubris teaching, you know. As soon as they grabbed the Hot Pockets, I was like, boom, out of there, but it freaked me out.
I wonder if anybody else has seen that. That is classic, right, Doctor?
It is. That would be usual, yes. That is something that they do. There was one time a woman was going around with her personal project hybrid, and he was interested in the market even though he wasn't living there. And she was telling him what things were, how they cook them. And he picked up a loaf of bread. He said, do you cook this too?
Yes, exactly. It was that type of situation. I was like, this is knowledge that every human, like adult, would know.
Should have.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the first thing you have to learn about this couple is the guy from some foreign country that's way out of the way, and he's never been in a supermarket before. He's never seen food like that. You know, I mean, you have to eliminate all those things. And
yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like it, though.
It seemed out of this planet. You know, I had no other way of explaining it, but, you know, your hubris theory kind of fit in very nicely, you know.
No, it indeed does. All right, look, again, I'm going to say this again. If there's any women out there who don't mind talking and or healthcare workers who have seen these embryos disappear around the 10-week mark, plus or minus a little bit, I sure would appreciate an email, artbell@knye.com. That's artbell@knye.com. Mark, you're on the air.
Howdy. One of my earliest memories I have as a young child was a nightmare about gray aliens and whatnot, a face floating above my head, I think in a crib.
Right.
And watching Communion completely put a fear in me, and it creeped me out. A 17-year-old is clinging to my mother.
Right.
How could I find maybe a hypnotherapist or regression therapist that's legitimate to try to get this garbage out of my head?
Well, there's only a handful of us around. There's Yvonne Smith in Los Angeles. There's me in the East Coast. There's Jed Turnbull in New York, and a couple of other people. A lot of people have agendas. You have to be very careful. They think that these beings are here to help us, to save us, to heal us, to heal the earth, to heal everything, and they're just wonderful, and they're light beams, and they dance with them, and this and that. And that is just not what people tell me, and or my colleague Bud Hopkins when he was doing this work.
Okay, well, I'm in Northern California, and if there is any way I could try to find someone that's legitimate, I don't know how. That's what I'm worried about. The people who want to dance.
Yeah, there used to be somebody in San Francisco, but I think that she sort of gave up on it. So there used to be more people who did this work. I had a whole long list of people, and now there's very few people left.
I suppose, Doctor, think about it. If I understand what that caller's saying and what you're saying, maybe the control has already begun, and that's why there are fewer. Have you thought of that?
It's possible. Several of them died. Some of them just sort of gave up the ghost, so to speak. Just gave up doing it. I'm ready to give up doing it. I've done it for so many years now, and I'm older, and I need to do other things. But the fact is that it is possible that they've got to everybody, including me. Who knows? But it's awful. It's just awful. I mean, if the government knew about this, they would be inviting people to come in and tell them their stories, and And there's another problem here. The problem is that most regular hypnotists, people who do hypnosis to stop smoking or lose weight or whatever it is, they can't do this work. They don't know anything about abductions. They don't know when people are confabulating, saying false things. The abductee doesn't know it either, usually. They don't know how to deal with abductees at all. People think that they do, and they get charged exorbitant fees to do hypnosis and all that, and then nothing comes out, and if something does come out, it's false memories or false information.
Mm-hmm.
And hypnotists don't understand that there's a learning process for abduction hypnosis. You have to know about the abduction phenomenon.
Got it. Very quickly, you're on the air with Dr. Jacobs and not a lot of time. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Am I in the air?
You are.
Oh, yeah. Why aren't aliens from other planets ever spotted by the news media? I have a theory. They're not here yet. I never see them on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles. My theory is they're not here yet.
Okay. Well, you're welcome to your theory. Hello there in Ohio, I believe. You're on the air with Dr. Jacobs.
Yes, I was wondering if these hybrids are intelligent enough to hold positions of authority within the government, and if so, could that be why you don't ever see nothing in the media?
That is a good question.
Yeah, and they certainly would be intelligent enough to hold positions within the government if they had a tremendous amount of knowledge about the society. And what that means is, the question then is how long have they been doing this? How long have they been integrating into the society? I don't think all that long, and the reason is because people didn't start telling me about this until around 2003 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I wasn't getting these kinds of accounts. And now, as Karen Morgan, the one who's in all three of my books, told me, it's all hybrids all the time. You know, they've gone past the gray aliens and all that.
Doctor, are you really going to stop doing this?
Well, I just signed up a new person to come because I promised her that I would at a conference. But I'm old and I'm tired.
And I'm in sympathy with that. Thank you again for being on the program. And if it is one of your last appearances, I'm glad we got it. And I think you're spot on, as the English would say. And it's really something to go to bed and think about tonight, folks. Dr. Jacobs, thank you for appearing.
Thanks for having me, Art. I really appreciate it.
Take care, buddy. Dr. David Jacobs. And yes, I had him back. And again, I want to ask if anybody out there has experienced a pregnancy of the type we talked about earlier, or you're a healthcare worker who can anonymously, if you must, relate this sort of story. We want to know how much of this is going on. I know of no other way to uncover this, frankly. Anyway, from the high desert to all those time zones, I'm Art Bell. Good night. Midnight in the desert.